Hello, and welcome to the Legion Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting the Legion of Superheroes from DC Comics. This is Legion Spotlight number 32, and I'll be pausing my look at the Legion of Superhero comics published in 1966 to answer a couple of questions. Love doing Q&A episodes, and got a couple of questions from fellow Legion of Superheroes fan, Jason Z. Now, his first question is, what was it about the Legion of Superheroes that really connected with the fans at the time? What made it stand out amongst all the other strange stories and weird characters that Superboy was running into at that time? What was kind of that special formula that worked and had fans riding in for more? Now, Jason's thoughts on this is he thinks it might have been partially due to a couple of factors. First, kids that read comics were in that kind of age group, that they were close to the age of Superboy and the Legion and stuff like that, and really connected with the idea of kind of joining and hanging out with a bunch of, you know, quote-unquote super friends at the clubhouse in the future. The term super friends I just find funny because that's obviously what they used for the Justice League cartoon back in the 60s and such. But man, I think it so fits the Legion, because here are a bunch of teenagers of like-minded attitudes and whatnot hanging out together and doing good. So anyways, Jason continues with that it was a future that was bright, clean, technologically advanced future full of science fiction elements. And of course, the 50s and 60s were the peak of science fiction of America, and that he thinks the idea of it being a quote-unquote Legion, in other words, a lot of teenage superheroes, 1,000 years in the future, really stoked the imagination of young readers. And I agree with everything Jason is saying there. I think a lot of those are key elements. Again, like I was saying, that Super Friends aspect, I think that is one of the underrated aspects of the Legion and its impact on Clark Kent, Superboy, Superman. Because if you look at a lot of the Superboy stories at the time, Superboy and Clark are the ultimate loners. Sure, he's got Pete Ross, his friend, he hangs out with Lana, but Lana's as much an antagonist as an ally in a lot of cases in those stories, always trying to prove Clark is Superboy. But with the Legion, Superboy and Clark goes from that solo character, that solo hero, to being a friend and an equal to a number of other heroes and such. And I think that socialization, that camaraderie and stuff was really, I think, one of the driving factors that turned Superman into the kind of character that could be not only the powerhouse of the Justice League, but its moral compass and its kind of spiritual center in many respects. And if you think about it, one of the things that makes Superman unique in the DC universe is everybody respects him, whether they like him or not. Because there's some characters, you know, you could argue Guy Gardner doesn't like him or whatnot. But all of the heroes, if Superman says this is the right thing to do, they may not want to do it. They may have a more pragmatic solution, but they're not going to argue whether that's the right thing to do or not. They will follow Superman's lead. They respect him. They like him. And Superman doesn't lord that over anybody. He doesn't use the, hey, I'm the most powerful guy there is, ever as a negotiating tactic or anything of the sort. And you could argue how much of that is just the character of Superman, how much of that is the Kent's upbringing. But I think you could also argue that a lot of that is having hung out with the Legion of Superheroes because, well, yeah, he is a powerhouse compared to, you know, Shrinking Violet, who can become small, Triplicate Girl or Duodamsel, who can become two or three people, or Lightning Lad, yeah, he can hurl lightning bolts, or Invisible Kid, who can turn invisible. Superman, in his tryout for the Legion, basically, you know, he was getting hazed by them. He picked up on that, and he kind of hazed them back by mimicking telepathy, which is Saturn Girl's power, magnetism, which was Cosmic Boy's power, and lightning, which was Lightning Lad's power. So he's got a sense of humor, but he also fit in with that group, and I think a lot of people who, certainly when I was growing up reading comics in the 80s and such, it wasn't the coolest thing to do. It's not going to win you friends or whatnot, or at least not in the mass group. I mean, obviously there's a serious number of us who were into comics and whatnot at the time. I think in the 50s and 60s, it was a similar thing. So I think a lot of the people reading the comics wanted to have that feeling of belonging to something. And the Legion gave that to Superboy, and that made Superboy much more identifiable to the readers. And because, again, as Jason was pointing out, the crazy, weird stuff Superboy was running into at the time, he had run into other people with similar powers of his on other planets or whatnot, but it's either he's in their world or they're in his or something, and yeah, he would travel 1,000 years to the future to hang with the Legion, or they'd travel 1,000 years back. But when he was with them, again, he was on even footing, sometimes very literally, be it Mon-El or Starboy when he had kind of basically a Kryptonian set of powers, effectively. And then, more recently with what I've been reading, Karate Kid fights him to a standstill. This is a regular human with crazy martial arts skills, of course. And, again, I think that sense of belonging, that sense of maturing Superboy Clark's personality and persona, he was always going to be a mainstay hero in the DC universe on the trajectory he was on, because, I mean, Superman predates Superboy in the publishing stuff. But giving him that sense of belonging, giving him that socialization, showing how he went from this solo hero to being the one everybody wanted to hang out with and respected and stuff, there's some major stories to happen there. And I'd love to see Mark Waid do that over in Batman Superman's World Finest or something like that. And I think he could even do that without having to showcase Superman, because I'd love to see a story in which the Legion has a mystery, comes back, recruits Robin, because, well, he's the teenager. And when Robin is there, he learns how they talk of Superboy and all of that, and kind of there are ways to do a compare and contrast of characters without one of the characters being there. Devin Grayson did this a number of times in the 90s and whatnot, I think, that were some great fun. And I think Mark Waid could absolutely do the same thing. So I think that was the hanging out with the friends at the clubhouse definitely pushed some buttons for a lot of people. The sci-fi aspect of it, I mean, Jason's absolutely right that 50s, 60s, that was a peak point of true science fiction when you had the Heinleins, the Asimovs, all of the people of that ilk that were a lot of what we consider, I don't say the founding fathers of science fiction as we know it today, but their work has totally withstood the test of time, and a lot of it has nods and acknowledgments in the Legion, and they're living out that great science fiction future, albeit it's a future anchored in the 60s. You know, the vast learning tapes and whatnot, it's like, well, computers have gone way beyond that in real world, so there's an aspect where you've got to take the Legion stories as, again, I go with the storyteller interpretation aspect of they were telling us the stories in the way they could understand it at the time. Were those same stories told now, the window dressing of the technology would be a little different. But part of why these things had that grounding in science fiction is some of the people at DC were out of that science fiction background. Julie Schwartz had been doing a lot of stuff in the science fiction publishing and whatnot, as had, I think, E. Nielsen Bridwell and a few others. So there was a lot of cross-pollination between the sci-fi community and the comic book community. I mean, that's totally witnessed in the history of comic book conventions and the interlacing of the comic book fandom, the science fiction fandom, etc. So I think that pushed a number of buttons in the right ways and stuff. Now, granted, again, their future was a little pristine, utopian and stuff, which at various points in our history has fallen out of favor because everyone wants that dystopic thing. And there have been times the Legion went that way, which I think was a total mistake. I'll be honest, I don't consider the 5 years later era one of the high points of the Legion. It was very dystopic. So I think that bright, clean tech future was something that was hopeful and something that a lot of people needed and wanted to be reading at the time. So I think that checked some buttons. And again, that aspect of it being lots of teenage superheroes, a literal Legion, that gave so many story possibilities. And there was a way that the Legion could have progressed where Superboy kept hanging out with them, and it could have been just a rotating cast of, you know, here's the characters that were handy for this story because there could have been an infinite number, so they only have you know, the five or six that are perfectly suited for this mission or something. And they didn't go that way. They built up a roster over time, and a lot of the stories of this era were done in ones. It was kind of the equivalent of a sitcom, and I'm not a huge fan of sitcoms in so much as, by their very nature, the characters need to not age and progress too much per episode. They don't learn the lessons of their mistakes because it's funny to see them keep making them. A lot of comic stories at the time centered around, here's the premise. You know, Lois is going to try to figure out if Clark is Superman. Lana's going to try to figure out if Clark is Superboy. Or, you know, can Spider-Man pay the bills? Is Peter Parker or whatnot? You know, whatever the standard shtick is for the property. And the Legion did a little of that. We've got definitely the Donum One stories and whatnot. But they also started building up that history more so than a lot of other stories did. And I think that was something that a lot of readers found interesting, because they did it in a very accessible manner. Oh, there's a number of members. You don't have to have read every Legion appearance. They tell you what you need to know, because there were the panel or two flashbacks of, here's Starboy's origin, or here's what you need to know of the past story to understand this. And having that new supporting cast built up for Superboy, I think there's, you know, on the one hand, no reason to think it would have caught on, and it was never planned to be anything more than just a, hey, let's have him hang out with a bunch of kids for an episode or an issue and be done with it. But the fact that it did resonate with the fans, they wanted more, they got more, that resonated with the fans, and it kept building up to where it basically took over Superboy's title more than once. And to really understand the Legion, you need to understand that, again, it started with Superboy and characters for him to hang out with, and it took on a life of its own to the point that Superboy, he was never superfluous, but he wasn't essential. And the Superboy the Legion hung out with changed over the decades as, well, Superboy didn't exist, he came back, it's a different character, yada yada. And I do think having the Legion 1,000 years in the future insulates it from today's events of the day and stuff like that, which obviously wasn't needed back in the 60s or whatnot, but come the 80s, the 90s, etc., being a bit more insulated from that, I think, helps, because some of those events derail things. But I definitely think it gave a lot of the readers of the time and since the sort of thing they were wanting. It was a good mix, is a good mix, of superheroes and science fiction. And the Legion, I think, even to this day, predominantly when it's published, tells stories about fighting the good fight, doing the right thing, and being heroic, versus so many superhero comics, they no longer fight crime, they fight other powered people and such. So I think, again, there's no reason to have looked at it when it came out and think, ah, this is going to be big someday. But it absolutely became big. In the 80s, it was one of the two mainstay, you know, anchor books at DC, Teen Titans being the other one. And the fact that those two have only intertwined a couple of times, again, still surprises me. But I think there's a lot of factors that weigh into it. And the interesting cast of characters, the ever-expanding cast of characters, everything from the tryout issues and such, where, you know, you see a couple of characters of, ah, that's a joke character, but I could see why he tried, or I can't see why he tried to join the Legion, or he's upset that he didn't get in, he vows revenge and stuff. Again, it opened the door to so many kinds of stories, and the fact they expanded it not just to Superboy, but then to Supergirl, they even did it with Superman in the Adult Legion and stuff. They realized they had something, and they ran with it. And I do think it's something that they need to get back into the mainstream DC publishing plan, because I think it's a major miss not to have that, particularly in this day and age where superheroes are crazy popular and science fiction's crazy popular as well. So, yeah, I think that's a great question. I think there's so many different angles to look at it from, and again, the what made it stand out against all the other crazy things the Superboy was encountering back then, most of which were there for the 8 to 12 pages and totally forgotten afterwards, does make the fact that it was published and grew into hundreds and hundreds of stories later pretty impressive. Now, Jason's second question was going back to the last Legion Spotlight episode, in which I covered Adventure Comics 346 and 347. Did I notice any drastic changes in the style of the issue preceding these, or from the style of the issues preceding these, which were the first stories written by Jim Shooter, who was only 13 or 14 at the time. For example, was the tone or pace or character development different from before? He knows I mentioned those stories being more decompressed. He certainly noticed that as well. And that it made Jason think more of kind of Marvel comic style and storytelling than previous issues. And there's a couple of things here. One, Jim Shooter was literally 14 or 15 when he was writing these stories. He was the target audience to a degree. I say to a degree because he was admittedly more of a Marvel fan. He thought he was trying to kind of help DC out with this and thought it was a lower bar to entry to get writing over there. And maybe that's true, maybe it's not. You could argue either way. Was he doing more of a Marvel comic style? Absolutely, and he admits it six ways to Sunday. They had the more continuing stories over at Marvel. There was more characterization, more depth. He was trying to bring that into DC. Is that a drastic change from the preceding issues and stuff? Absolutely. And if you look at both the Legion comics and really a lot of the other stories at DC at the time, they were one-off, again, almost sitcom-style stories of something happens, wackiness or superheroics ensue, and we end the story not radically different than where we started it. And for them to go from here's a 8 to 12 page installment to, you know, we're going to have two 10 page installments, and one's a chapter one, one's a chapter two, to the point where we're at now where some of these actually are 4-part stories, chapter one and two in one issue, and then 3 and 4 in the next issue. Now, to realize how groundbreaking and mind boggling that is, you've got to put yourself into the mindset of that era of comics and how those comics were distributed. They were literally out on the newsstand, the spinner racks, and either you found them or you didn't. Because back at this point in the 60s, the direct market was a decade away. And I'm not going to say there weren't any comic book stores, but those would be stores that had back issues, that had comics, but nothing like what we think of as a current comic book shop. So if you wanted to be sure to get Adventure Comics 346 and 347, you had to go hit the spinner rack either at your favorite store or sometimes your favorite couple of stores. Because when I was growing up in the 80s, a lot of the comics I first started reading, I got off the spinner rack at 7-Eleven or the grocery store my mom shopped at. We'd go grocery shopping, she'd be getting the groceries, she'd let me go hang out over at the spinner rack, and I'd be just reading a lot of the comics. And I was very lucky that the store didn't really seem to mind me doing that. And I read a ton of stuff back then. I think that's a lot of what fanned my interest in the comics and stuff was being exposed to so many, being able to get some of them, and just, again, they had content that worked for me as a kid. So I think Shooter was definitely trying to slow the stories down a little bit, but given so many of them were previously almost slideshow-level stories of, this happens on this planet, next panel, this happened over on this planet, next panel, something else happened over here. It was almost a panel per scene, just about, or maybe a scene would go 3 panels if it was a long one, to, okay, let's actually spend a few pages on the tryouts or in this event or this scene or what have you. Let's get a little more character definition and development versus somebody just declaring their love for so-and-so, it's unrequited or they don't know or what have you, almost soap opera-ish. Now, it's nowhere near what we would consider decompressed today or today's level of storytelling depth, but Jim Shooter was actively trying to instill some of that, not only in the stories he was writing, but in DC in general. And I think the Golden Age, early Silver Age style storytelling was too slideshowy for me. It glossed over the details. It was, some of it's fun, some of it's great, don't get me wrong, but it's skimming the surface of a story. I think we're getting into the point in the mid-60s, later 60s, certainly as we get into the 70s, where we're actually getting into the story, spending some quality time there and stuff, seeing the characters, the interaction, getting some better dialogue, some more kind of substance on the page. And I certainly think that carries into the 80s. But then I think we got to a point later, some in the 90s, where it was just shock and awe, you know, I'm trying to impress you versus tell you a good story. And that's, again, where a ton of people left comics in the 90s. To later in the 2000s and whatnot, where you could spend, and it's still that way today, an entire issue and maybe get 2 scenes. I mean, the number of story beats, the number of things that actually happen in a book drop precipitously at certain times in certain books compared to so many things were happening early on. I mean, Superman's origin is just a couple of pages long. You got a Krypton exploding, the death of the Kents, he becomes a reporter, you know, this, that, and the other. So we never spent enough time on those to really develop them. But then it gets to where later, you know, we'll spend, you know, an entire issue on each of those events or something. And there's a sweet spot for each reader. I think it's a little bit different as to how much do they almost gloss over it and how much do they dwell on it to have that perfect comfort level. For me, late 70s, early 80s is kind of the spot I would zero in where I think most comics were doing a pretty good job on it. And certainly for me, DC was a high point of that era. It was what I like. So I think not only was Jim Shooter making those changes need to be made. And where I'm at in the reading in the mid to late 1966, we're seeing some of those things starting to happen. Jim Shooter being a main mover and shaker on that. Stories splitting over issues, yet being accessible if people only got the second issue and didn't get it. And giving them enough completion in the first issue that if they don't get the second, which obviously they were trying to entice people to do, or Shooter was trying to entice people to do, that they don't feel like the issue was a waste of time and money. And I think as we get through the 60s into the 70s, we're going to see a fairly fundamental change of going from some issues where things just are happening pretty fast. I mean, we're slowing down, spending a little more time into it, but still, again, the whole bit with Nemesis Kid, they resolve that in a couple of panels out of the blue. Whereas I think by the time we get to an equivalent sort of thing in the 70s, we get a lot more characterization in the moment. It becomes more almost cinematic than narrated story, I guess would be the way to put it. So I definitely am noticing the changes. I gotta give it to Shooter of being able to do this, not just at all at age, you know, 13, 14, whatever, but on a recurring basis is astounding. And he's had a crazy career in comics, was in charge at Marvel at one point. He's run a couple of companies. He's had its ups and downs. I don't think he's always had necessarily the best people skills because he's got his followers. He's certainly got his detractors. But his impact on the Legion, on Marvel, on 90s comics, the whole birth of Valiant and all of that, he's a key figure in comics. So again, reading some of his really early work at a young age is fascinating. And he did some great stuff, introduced a lot of anchor Legionnaires. Because we're hitting the point where most of the foundational aspect of what is canonical Legion is more or less established. We haven't gotten all of the things. We still got like the Fatal Five coming up, Universo, a couple of other Legionnaires need to be introduced, but we've gotten a lot of them. So there's, again, only a handful more that I think cap off what I would consider kind of the canonical Legion, not only for the original era of the Legion, but the ones that are almost always in the reboot, the three-boot, the retro-boot, that kind of a thing. And really, we're not that far from having most of the characters that retro-boot was getting us back to. And I think it's fascinating in so much as some of the current comics I'm reading, specifically Justice Society of America, it looks like the retro-boot Legion's coming back again, which is fascinating. So really, I think not only does the storytelling, again, evolve over time, but I think Jim Shooter was one of the more intentional about changing the storytelling and trying to improve it, trying to get more interest. And I think, again, that's part of why the Legion got the following it did during that era, was a lot of what he was intentionally almost marvelizing about a DC book. So it's always hard to notice some of the storytelling style changes as they're happening. It's only when you look back and realize, oh, you know, we started spending more time in a scene than we used to, or we're no longer getting the thought balloons. We're getting the captions instead, narrated by the characters and stuff like that. You don't always notice that as it's happening, because it just, maybe it's an experimental thing versus now everybody's doing it. So again, Jim Shooter had studied the Marvel comics, what was working from them, what wasn't working at DC, and was applying it there. And I think that was brilliant. I'm not going to say I agree with everything he's done, either in the Legion or other stuff, or all the conclusions he necessarily came to in doing that kind of analysis, but he certainly had success. I gotta compliment him on that. Now, Jason's next question is regarding the breaking up of stories in the issue, which separate them into parts one, part two, and sometimes part three in a single comic. And do you prefer these early stories in one long narrative from beginning to end, or when they use those breaks in the story? Now, for Jason, he thinks it works well when the stories are broken up into those multiple parts, especially when they're so dense with so much story content happening in so few pages, which, again, canonical in 50s, 60s comics and stuff. And he's thinking specifically, again, the pre-Jim Shooter issues. And he's not sure if it works well with the stories being decompressed, and it will likely flow better into one longer story. And it kind of reminds him of the chapter books like the Hardy Boys and things of that sort that always end each chapter on a cliffhanger to ensure you turn to that next page, to that next chapter, and see what happens next. And, man, there's a lot to talk about there in terms of, do I like it when they break it up into an explicit part one, part two, part three? I got mixed feelings on that. There are some times where, yeah, because it's nice to have a pausing point and say, you know, hey, either I'm going to start recording a little bit on the story, or just I'm going to go check my email before diving into the next part, or what have you. And there are certain stories that have natural breakpoints and sections to them. The Legion splits off into a couple of sub-teams to go investigate different things. That has a clear part one, part two, part three, or section one, two, three, whatever you want to call them. So it makes sense to title them as such. Certainly, if for any reason you need to be swapping out artists and stuff, doing them at section breaks makes a lot of sense. And I think there are a couple of times, actually quite a few times, where they'll do a two-part story in the Legion. They'll kind of set up a mystery, and sometimes explicitly, hey, have you figured it out yet? Kind of a moment at the end of the first part, and then second part resolves it. Doctor Who did this during the Tenet era for a while. You know, part one, they get into trouble, end on either a cliffhanger or that reveal or what have you. Second part is, how do they get out of that? And I think giving the audience that pausing point to stop, reflect, and theorize as to what was happened next, to engage with the story, is a smart move. Now, when you do it in sections in a given comic, they're going to probably just jump to the next story and keep going. They may stop, think about it, whatever, for a little bit. When you do it between issues, that's where you can get more engagement, if it's a good story, or you get basically a killing of the story momentum. If you haven't ended on a strong moment and you don't pick up off that moment and use that to bridge the time gap between issues. And the whole bit of ending on a cliffhanger, that definitely has happened in a lot of books I've read. It's happened in a lot of comics I've read. There was one point with the new Teen Titans where it felt like every issue was ending on a cliffhanger to the point where it was ridiculous. And this was still Marv Wolfman writing it later in his run. It was not his high point. And it was predictable. It was almost cliche. And when you do that, you've got to make sure that the cliffhangers have enough difference that it doesn't feel like you're just going in circle and, you know, leaning too far over one edge of the merry-go-round or something. And I think if you're going to do that kind of a cliffhanger, explicitly separating into a part one, part two of the story, to have that moment feel a little more substantial than if it was just one continuous narrative, makes a lot of sense. And I think it comes down to how decompressed the story is, how much in the moment are you, and how much story progression there is, both per part and per issue. And it's easy to get that wrong, and probably easier to get it wrong than it is to get it right. I think Shooter generally did a good job with it. I think a lot of the other writers have done a fairly good job with that. But we're still, at least at the point I'm reading in mid-1966, the point where while there is development from story to story to story, we'll get some new Legionnaires, somebody will leave, lose their powers, die, come back, lose their arm, whatever. There's not so much progression that we don't wind up having, it looks like they've killed everybody off in the first part, and the second part is the reveal of, oh, that didn't really happen, and here's why. But it comes down to, how can you have, as a story writer, both the illusion of change and feel like things are happening, even if in the grand scheme of things, not a lot's changing? How can you actually have true change, new characters, a permanent death, or at least as permanent as comics allow, or evolution of the characters, aging of the characters even? And that's something that you've got to balance that with accessibility of the comic. If you were to skip 2 years of reading the Legion comics at this point where I'm at and come back, there'd be a couple of new members, but nothing where it's like, I don't recognize this book, or gosh, it's identical to where I left off. Nothing happened in the meanwhile. So there's an aspect to the writing in this era that's fundamentally different from the comics we're reading today, which are written, 60 years later, thereabouts. The comics in this era, the mid-60s and stuff of Legion, were more accessible, expected less prior knowledge of the material, provided you the information, moved a story along, sometimes built up a little subplot or something, but often not a lot of that. Maybe toss some gratuitous world building out for a couple of panels or something just to show the coolness of the future or what have you. And had, again, the illusion of progress, some actual progress mixed in, which is a good combination. And I think because so much was happening in some of these issues, introduction of a bunch of characters, people going from place to place, things happening, whatever, having those breathers between parts helped. And I think in modern stories, where we tend to get that and where it works is, again, when you've got a large team, you break them into subgroups to have parallel adventures, and then you bring them all back together at the end. And we see that a fair amount. Again, ending on cliffhangers, be it at the end of a part or an issue, time-tested tradition can work. I always feel that you need to do that sometimes to, build up to the moment and give somebody, the audience, something really meaty to think about, theorize on. How would they get out of it? What would they do if they were the writer picking up after this? Whatever. But not so much where it feels like that's how every issue has to end, and that you're often better off not having an actual cliffhanger, but a monumental reveal. Kind of the unmasking of the villain. Oh, it's this person that we recognize, we know, and land that reveal. Because if it's, we've unmasked them and it's like, who? Then you flop the reveal. But then it makes people think, what is going to happen next? Does this really turn it on its ears and stuff like that? And we're seeing the storytelling again, like I've been talking about, starting to change. Shooter's doing a lot of that. We'll see some of the other writers do that. And certainly when we get some of the other writers and artists on board over the next decade or two of the book, Mike Grell, Dave Cockrum, certainly when Paul Levitz takes over some of the writing, when we get some of the early Keith Giffen work, and even some of the later stuff, he was a huge Legion creator and stuff. We definitely see the evolution of the storytelling, yet it stays true to a lot of those elements that were what made the Legion what it was originally. A cool group of interesting characters fighting the good fight. They're in a clean, happy, successful future. There's hope for humanity. We'll go to the stars, we'll reach out to other races and stuff, other alien cultures and stuff, and form this big united planet, and it's all good. We still need heroes, and we still have heroes. Those are kind of the cornerstones of a Legion book, and that's where I feel some of the reboots went a little off the mark. It was a boring utopia. Parents were meddling in the affairs of kids. No kid wants to read that. No parent wants to read that, I think. And things of that sort. So I do think there are a lot of these aspects that are fundamental to the Legion. Some are fundamental to a lot of comics. Some are unique to the Legion. And just seeing where it's gone and stuff from that one wacky story that could have just as easily been ignored and had nothing after it to realizing how it grew and succeeded over time. And again, looking at some of those creators that, again, were 13-year-old writing comic, who'd have thunk that could happen? Much less been successful, much less grow into the career Shooter had afterwards. And then again, watching that evolution of the storytelling and trying to both recognize it in the time and in hindsight, always a lot of fun. So I think where I'm at in 1966, we're seeing the early changes into more of that Bronze Age storytelling style. We're seeing some of it already, some of it'll come a little further in, and then once we get into early 70s and stuff, I think it'll be a lot more full swing. It'd be fun to watch how that kind of comes into its own and then morphs into kind of the ABC storytelling style that Levitz really ran with in the late 70s, early 80s, where he'd have an A plot line, a B plot line that was kind of building up, and a C plot line that was kind of winding down. So there was always the beginning of something, the meat and potatoes of the book, and the end of something. And sometimes that would all be the same story. Other times it would just be kind of, having subplots, building up, getting introduced, becoming the main thrust of the book, and then having the aftermath and stuff as other things took over. And it made it an interwoven, almost braided plot lines that really strengthened the book. So I do think there's a lot that could be learned, as Shooter had learned from looking at Marvel Comics, by looking either at the Legion comics or other stuff over time, seeing what works, trying to figure out why it works, articulate that, and then, you know, if you're a writer like Shooter, going and doing it on some other book. So, again, great questions, Jason. Appreciate them. And with that, I think we'll call it an episode.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.